So with this mitochondrial antioxidant of ergothionine, what's fascinating about it is we do not make it, so therefore we can have, we need to supplement with it or eat it. There is a deficiency potentially of it. This is being explored more. Dr. Bruce Ames, famed longevity researcher, has called it the longevity vitamin, because you also have a unique transporter system, the ETT, in your body, meaning you were evolved to use this ingredient. It's a transport system just for this ingredient, and it's uniquely stored and ready when your body needs it to protect the mitochondria. So there's this whole mechanistic pathway around this ingredient, and it's largely unknown. So I think, again, a really great stack would be spermidine and ergothionine to really protect the mitochondria and enhance this cellular detox.
And this was Sean Wells. It was a blast to talk to him. He has formulated over 1,000 supplements, food, beverages, and cosmeticals, and patented 25 novel ingredients, and is now known as Ingredientologist, the science of ingredients. Sean is a nutritional biochemist, registered dietitian, certified sports nutritionist. He has over a decade of clinical experience and has counseled thousands of people on natural health solutions such as keto, paleo, fasting, and supplements. And this was one of the best conversations that we have ever had on the show, because Sean really goes deep and knows what he's talking about and gave us tons of insights and practical tips and tools that we can use today to optimize our health. So guys, please listen to this episode. It was epic. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Brain VR Podcast. We are sitting here on Biohacker Summit in Amsterdam, and we have Sean Wells here with us. Hi, Sean. Could you please introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. I am a formulator, a biochemist, a dietitian, and I've formulated about 700 supplements that are out there in the world. I've been doing that for about 20, 25 years now. I've worked with more than 100 companies throughout the world in practically every market. Patented about 20 ingredients, including things like T-creatine and dynamine, which are popular in like energy drinks, nootropics, fat burners, pre-workouts. I mean, pretty much every pre-workout has these ingredients. And I have like dihydroberberine, which is an exciting ingredient that I've patented. I was first to bring ketones, exogenous ketones in the salts to market. Just a lot of things that I've been blessed to have worked on. I have a partner that's in China that's really empowered me, that has a 1,000,000-square-foot facility.
Wow.
With over 100 scientists. Kai Lin, his company's NNB, and he's been my partner for about 10 years. And then more recently, I have two partners that are German chemists that are just brilliant and are conducting the studies and doing the patents and like taking all my ideas and just building entire companies around each ingredient. So it's been really exciting. I could dive into all those, but like this, my intro is, wow. I guess I've been doing biohacking for close to 20 years before it was called that. I had a host of autoimmune issues. At one point, I couldn't get out of bed for about 6 months. Literally couldn't take more than 4 or 5 steps. I was just dealing with Epstein-Barr and a number of things. I was struggling for life. And the biohacking was a solution to all that. Doing keto, doing paleo, doing fasting, doing these supplements completely transformed me. So, you know, that's me. And more recently, I think I've been getting known for discussing mental health, in particular, the depression I've dealt with and suicidal thoughts, imposter syndrome, all those kinds of things. And then also psychedelics. So
right,
we're going to talk about that.
Well, a lot of important topics. Well, first of all, let me understand your job actually right now. It sounds really interesting. So you are this kind of guy right now behind all, like, so you kind of can choose from the counter and you know, say, okay, let's try this with this, and go into biochemistry and actually create something new and explore that seems like a really cool kind of a job when you can actually think about stuff and make like see them happen in the world. That must feel
amazing. Yeah, well, one of the things that I have done probably most often is just look at the metabolites of these ingredients or sister chemicals too. Like if there's a polyphenol that does this, maybe there's another one that's better that hasn't really been studied yet, and I'll study that. Or I look at a downstream metabolite. My newest energy ingredient, which we've filed about 23 patents on, over 10 studies on, is called paraxanthine. It's a metabolite of caffeine. And there's also the other two metabolites, theophylline and theobromine. The interesting thing is that caffeine itself is fairly toxic. It's actually a toxin in plants meant to repel bugs. And about 60% of us are slow metabolizers and with the CYP1A2 gene. And so we have difficulty converting caffeine to paraxanthine. Paraxanthine is the thing that you want. It's the thing that has the mood boosting, the focus, the energy enhancement. And what we find is that these slow metabolizers end up having more side effects than benefits because they're stuck in caffeine and a slow drip to paraxanthine. Plus, theophylline in particular is a bronchodilator with a lot of side effects. Theobromine is largely ineffective. And so, like, paraxanthine is the one you want. And even for fast metabolizers, those are the people that say, oh, I can have caffeine and go straight to bed. They're taking paraxanthine and seeing that it works for them because caffeine has this adaptation effect where it takes more and more and more to hit that same level. So for these fast metabolizers, they don't get any benefit either. Now, they don't have the side effects like the slow metabolizers, which is great. But this is like super interesting that now we're seeing that, for example, with paraxanthine, it's enhancing nitric oxide to the brain with PDE9 inhibition. It's increasing BDNF pretty dramatically, improving glutathione and catalase, reducing oxidative stress. We believe it's going to have a pretty profound effect on traumatic brain injury, et cetera, because it's increasing dopamine in particular and serotonin. You know, dopamine is associated with a lot of neurological dysfunction. So like with Parkinson's, et cetera. So we're pretty excited. And you have like this mood boost from it, but without any of the side effects. It sounds like ridiculous, but this is just one ingredient. And it's just a lot of times when I look at the metabolites, if you go downstream in these pathways and you start looking at them, it can be fascinating. They can have much better effects. And like, how long have we all been taking caffeine? And it sounds obvious, but no one really researched this one. And, you know, this just happens. Or like sometimes with a reversible reaction, I look at like, well, what if you like stack the reaction in one way, not only give the ingredient that you want, the compound that you want, but like give the prior ingredient in that pathway and kind of like push a pathway one direction. That's another thing like I work on. It's so cool. Like, I honestly love this stuff.
It's fascinating.
It's something amazing.
Like, another ingredient that we just came out with is...
Can I ask you about paraxanthine? Is this the compound that inhibits the adenosine receptors in the brain? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has more wakefulness than
fatigue effects, like same as caffeine?
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, exactly. It has greater adenosine inhibition than actually caffeine does. So more wakefulness. And it actually, in a study with animals, outperformed modafinil. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is really exciting. And we've been studying it at, in our studies, 50, 100, and 200 milligrams. The couple of companies that we've launched with as partners, we're doing a very slow rollout, a very controlled rollout for a reason, because we don't want it to get into crazy products, gets, you know, put with alcohol, have people taking three times the dose, you know, whatever. Like, it's very important that we're like, we're getting all our patents in a row, we're getting our studies out there, we're filing for generally recognized as safe, you know, we have all that stuff. And so it's really important how we roll this out. But the companies that are rolling out with it, like this 300 milligram dose, where it's just, it's so clean. Everyone loves it. It's just super, super clean. You don't have the anxiety, the tremors, the agitation, the sleep disruption, Like literally, like people are saying, I've never been able to work out in the evening with a pre-workout, and now I can.
I was going to talk about psychedelics, so this is cool.
This is my passion. So yes. Okay.
Do you need to synthesize this compound, or can you find it in some natural sources?
To be DHEA, to be compliant as a dietary supplement, it does have to occur naturally. It just occurs at really low doses, low amounts in natural sources. So it does occur in like cacao and coffee and, you know, several of the sources that you would expect that caffeine and these methyl xanthines would live. But it's just trace amounts, and it's not feasible to do an extraction. So it is made synthetically. We're working on enzymatic and fermentation processes, so it would be considered natural, but at the moment it's synthetic.
So just to be clear, the best possible way how to get this compound is by supplement?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, the only way, really. I mean, yes, you could get it naturally, but it would be in such...
Yeah.
You'd be getting like
overdose
a milligram. it wouldn't be very feasible. Oh. And we're finding that you don't want to co-administer with caffeine. So in these sources that would have naturally occurring paraxanthine, you're still getting the other methyl xanthines, in particular caffeine. And we're finding that's counterproductive for all the reasons that I was talking about. Like it kind of overshadows the paraxanthine, and there's all the side effects that you're getting from it. So I
just have this interesting idea in my mind right now, because coffee, like, it's not only about caffeine, right? So coffee is a super drink, basically, because there's a lot of compounds.
Yes.
There's flavanols, flavonoids, and there's...
Yeah, polyphenols, chlorogenic acid, yeah.
There's been many, many studies done on decafs, basically, without caffeine. So I'm thinking, okay, if you supplement the compound you're talking about, and then you add it to, decaf.
Yeah, we've definitely thought about all this. Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I love like looking at nature and how brilliant nature is as a formulator. I'm a formulator. I'm very well known in the industry.
And you are nature as well, right? So you are part of it.
There you go. But like if you look at green tea, for example, right? Like what I love about this is you look at EGCG, which is a powerful polyphenol, and it has vasodilation effects. And you look at L-theanine, and it has this calming effect. And caffeine obviously can have a stimulatory effect on the central nervous system. And you look at the combination of these three things, and it has like a smoothing effect, enhancing like vasodilation, smoothing out caffeine, all this stuff in green tea. And so like you said, with coffee as well, or if you look at cacao with like catechins that are present as polyphenols in the cacao, but also these bliss chemicals like PEA and anandamide, and it's all endlessly fascinating to me. But yes, and I was going to say, like, one of my other new ingredients, like as an example, it's called dileucine. So it's muscle protein synthesis. Leucine's been the gold standard for years for driving muscle protein synthesis, the anabolic pathway. I don't know like how high level the listeners are, but like to turn on the building of muscle and the maintenance of muscle, you need muscle protein synthesis versus catabolism or muscle protein breakdown. And to turn on muscle protein synthesis, it's the one key amino acid in the complete amino acid profile that would be leucine.
Yeah, just to that note, like, you can basically get rid of some of the negative effects of fasting for muscle breakdown, you supplement with leucine, right? So you can fast and supplement with leucine, and you don't have as much muscle breakdown.
Yeah, and potentially like something that would inhibit catabolism, like a leucine metabolite called HMB, would make a really great stack. So that would affect like net muscle accretion, like when you're inhibiting the breakdown and you're enhancing the synthesis, it's kind of like a win-win, right? You're really pushing it in your favor. But what's fascinating is di- and tripeptides with the PEPT1 transporter in the body are selectively chosen over free single amino acids and taken up faster. And so my theory years ago when I approached my team was, what if dileucine works better than leucine. 186% faster to the plasma, about 60 to 80% better at turning on muscle protein synthesis, which is groundbreaking, especially when we're leucine or anabolic resistant as we age. And this could be because of androgens are lowering, like testosterone, DHEA, you know, things like growth hormone as well, that you're becoming more insulin resistant, that you're becoming more sedentary. It's taking more leucine, more protein to turn on muscle protein synthesis as we age. And we're eating less protein as we age. So it's a, you end up in this case of what's called sarcopenic obesity, where you're trading off muscle for fat. Even if you're not changing your weight, your tissue composition is changing. And so we're really excited about dileucine helping with this anabolic resistance, and in particular, looking at things like sarcopenia, cachexia, like clinical conditions where you're losing muscle, but certainly for bodybuilding and sports nutrition and things like that. So it's just stuff like that. Like this is so fascinating to me, and you know, delivery systems, and I love all this stuff.
Okay, so I just have a question about this, because this is fascinating topic, actually. There has been like quite, not, I wouldn't say controversy, but if you dive deep into some studies about longevity and actually protein consumption and muscle protein synthesis, you find something really interesting. And it's that,
that's a great question.
You actually really need protein and muscle protein synthesis for you to be able to just feel strong and, you know, to have optimal levels of testosterone and stuff like that, not only for men, but also for women as well. Testosterone is important for them as well, actually. So you look at this side of things, and then you see, oh, lower protein intake tends to make you more, you know, like older or healthier in the long term. And I found this really like confusing, but what I found from the studies was this kind of, you know, extraction of, okay, what if you kind of cycle these, you know, what if you get the best out of the, you know, best of two worlds?
That's it.
Is that something
that's
that you
the
see?
Answer. That's the answer. You got it. You got it. Like that's kind of like future thinking right there, because like over time, speaking of like that adaptation effect that I was talking about with caffeine, right? That over time, or like if I was to use like exogenous testosterone, right? Like injectable testosterone from outside of the body, exogenous. My endogenous inside the body production of testosterone would reduce, because I'm getting it from the outside. So my body's like, why would I need to make this? And it's the same as what you're saying, that over time, the body's just going to like see that protein as just a caloric source to oxidize and not really having the same benefit and not necessarily as needed. So yes, you can have the best of both worlds. You can sensitize your body by protein cycling is the concept that you're essentially coming up with. And I think that's why, yes, rapamycin can be potentially effective at you know, going down this path of really inhibiting muscle, inhibiting protein synthesis. I will say muscle protein synthesis is one thing versus whole body protein synthesis or tissue specific protein synthesis. And I think that gets confused a lot, because without a doubt, when it comes to aging, to your point, the number one predictor of all cause mortality and how long we live and lifespan and health span, how well we live, is muscle strength. Like one of the best predictors is actually grip strength. And you can literally, there's been a number of these large-scale survey studies, like NHANES kind of like studies, where they looked at like different levels of muscle strength, and the people that had the lowest in like quartiles, I think, like with, you know, four levels, the people that had the lowest level of muscle strength were like three times as likely to die early. And it was something like 86% more likely to have coronary heart disease and 62% higher cancer rates. I mean, it's it's a dramatic difference to not have the strength. And I used to work in nursing homes as well as hospitals. And when you would fall, like people do when they're older, especially when they don't have good muscle control and there's not enough muscle tissue. And because you don't have enough muscle tissue and you're not using it, you have poor bone mineral density and you have a weak immune system, which has been shown when you have less muscle. And you don't have good proprioception in like how you're using your body in space, right? Because you just don't use it enough. You don't have the muscle. That now you fall easier, you break the hip easier, and you break a hip and you go into a nursing home, like your chances of getting an infection, of dying, of not coming back are pretty high. Like, so it's really important to maintain muscle. And I think you hit the nail on the head as to not just always be taking tons of protein, but cycle it and also do things like fasting. You know, maybe take like a 72-hour fast like once a month or every 2 months or something, and then come back in and use the protein. I like to go higher protein on my heaviest workout days. And then on days that I'm not working out as hard, maybe it's more of a veganish day. I don't know. Something like that.
Cool. Perfect. Thank you.
Talking about longevity, what is your take on NAD+? Is it important? And what supplements maybe are promising in this field?
That's a great question. One I love. I'm mitochondrial obsessed. So like my old book, The Energy Formula, like pretty much revolves around the mitochondria. I've always said like mito's the next keto. Like I'm all about the mitochondria. I mean, it's the source, like my book, The Energy Formula. I mean, that's the source of energy. Mm-hmm. It's where 95% of your ATP is created, the energy currency for the body, adenosine triphosphate. And if you look at what used to be called the Krebs cycle or the citric acid cycle, this crank where ATP is largely synthesized going through these organic acids, one of the last stops before you get to OAA is this NAD to NADH. And if you can stack things more in the direction of NAD, then we tend to see NAD is therefore a substrate to actually energetically have the mitochondria make ATP and keep them healthy and keep DNA healthy, which is all incredibly important to have healthy mitochondria to make more mitochondria to protect the DNA from damage, to keep telomere length or telomere, however you like to say it, length longer. NAD is all correlated with that. So and the thing is, as we age, NAD production plummets pretty dramatically. And NADase, the enzyme, also called CD38, that actually increases dramatically as we age. So it's a double whammy where we're making less of it, we're breaking it down faster, and exposure to blue light, stress, alcohol, lack of sleep, you know, et cetera, all correlate to less NAD. So you can see where like this can become a huge problem. And it is a logical strategy to try and boost NAD levels to have more energy, to have healthier mitochondria, to live longer, and certainly thrive. And so absolutely, there's a number of ingredients out there that get talked about, like True Niagen, which is nicotinamide riboside, NR, NMN, which I'm a huge fan of. Here, like, and I will say, I lean towards NMN over NR. I think the data is a little bit more compelling there. I think Rhonda Patrick and David Sinclair would kind of lean in with me there. But it's more direct in the pathway than NR. And the data is pretty solid. It's a lot of animal studies and a couple human studies, but it's coming in. I would say that if you look at the animal studies and extrapolate that out, probably the dosing of NMN is too low, like where a lot of people are taking 100 milligrams, 200 milligrams, maybe 500 milligrams. It seems like we're talking more like 1 to 2.5 grams a day. So, and that gets expensive. I will say one of the cheapest and probably even more effective ways of boosting NAD is niacin, the full flush niacin. There's a study with 500 milligrams twice a day where it boosted NAD levels 8 times. Like pretty dramatically. And full flush niacin is not a joke. So be prepared. This is a high dose. So paresthesis is that flushing, burning, tingling. It literally will look like you have a sunburn. Your skin will feel itchy. It's not great, but you can potentially reduce this with some aspirin or some fish oil. There's been studies on that. So I personally just, you know, I've gotten used to it. You do adapt to this over time as well. But that is one of the most potent and cheap ways to boost NAD that I know of. Also, an interesting idea that I'm playing with is that I believe that with this kind of superficial flushing that's happening, this tingling, this paresthesis, this blood flow to the area, it could be incredibly powerful because you're ramping up NAD in the mitochondria already. Now you're doing it at the superficial level and you're going into a red light sauna. This could be like the ultimate stack. So that's something that I've been looking at. I want to study. And then the polyphenols, when it comes to NAD, are really powerful at...
There's just... I just need to mention something really important. And one of the pitfalls there might be with NMN.
Yeah.
Because it's a bit like there are some like interesting studies and mechanisms that and processes that
yeah.
It may be that actually NMN doesn't have a way
to get down to niacin.
Yeah. It breaks down actually to niacin.
Yeah.
So it's what
possible.
Do you think?
Yeah, it's possible.
We don't know yet, but I'm just glad that you're mentioning niacin
as a way. It's why I think that a really high dose may be necessary too. Like this is like kind of the same thought process with something like glutathione or carnosine. That like these are multiple amino acids and everyone says, oh, like, you know, you just break them down in your gut. But yes, you may break them down in your gut, even collagen, like with hydroxyproline, but you end up reassembling them too.
This is the point. Yeah.
So, and if you take a high enough level, like for example, like carnosine, which is beta-alanine and histidine, at some point you overwhelm this enzyme, carnosinase in this case, and there is a high enough dose that it will get through. So this may be the case with NMN, and it's really hard to tease out unless we've really, you know, explored all that. But I do love niacin, and this idea of stacking a pathway could be really potent where you take NMN and the full flush niacin, nicotinic acid. And that may be one of the best things to do, especially if you pair it with the best polyphenols. Not resveratrol, not pterostilbene, not EGCG. The best polyphenols, according to the studies where they've all been looked at head-to-head, is apigenin and fisetin, or some people say fisetin. So fisetin is strawberries, apigenin is parsley. Quercetin could be really good if you address the bioavailability, so if it's like in a liposome. But those are probably my favorite ones. I think resveratrol and EGCG and pteros, those are actually kind of overrated.
You just mentioned fisetin, apigenin, and the enzyme CD38.
Yeah, exactly.
With age. So like when I found out like this kind of mechanistic things, like it really blew my mind. So do I get it right that for that NMN can really work, you should take also fisetin and apigenin so you can decrease the amount of CD38.
Yeah, because like, okay, like this is again, like the idea, like when I really look to the biochemistry, the formulator in me wants to exploit a pathway. How do I leverage this pathway to my advantage? So kind of my ultimate stack would then be niacin, NMN, because maybe they do have synergy. And then having apigenin and fisetin to inhibit the CD38. So it will make the NAD more available that you're already creating. And so like this is, again, like it's kind of like I was saying with HMB and dileucine, right? It's like that's the incredible combination. Like I always want to like look at both sides. How do I manipulate both sides to my advantage?
And what is your take on spermidine?
I love it. Like that. So we don't really know like the most effective dose, but I can tell you that not only is it associated with autophagy, that cellular detox cleanup, think of like a little vacuum cleaner going into your cells. This isn't just important from the aspect of cells not having these toxins in them and them functioning better. But when a cell does have these toxins, it's a signal to kill the cell. And your cells become old, senescent, and they become targeted to die. And so, and in time, that means you're older and you're dying. So keeping your cells healthier is beneficial. This is why not eating so much all the time, maybe protein cycling, calorie cycling, fasting can be helpful, as well as this ingredient has been shown to affect mitophagy, which is one step further down the rabbit hole of protecting the mitochondria. Even better, that could be a great stack, because I'm all about stacks and kind of like going further than everyone else, is this ingredient L-ergothionine. It's a trace amino acid that's found in mushrooms and certain beans, and a tiny dose, kind of like spermidine. Spermidine, we don't know the most effective dose, but we're saying like 1 to 3 milligrams. Ergothionine could be around 5 to 10 milligrams. It's this trace amino acid that is a mitochondrial antioxidant, not just a cellular antioxidant. We know cellular antioxidants are kind of equivocal, like on benefit, like where there can be points where they become pro-oxidants, and it's very conflicting data. And sometimes you need them to be in an oxidative state to signal certain things, like recovery, like that's a whole other discussion.
We just talked about it actually on our episode, and it's all about the balance between your endogenous antioxidants, stress, which would be hormetic and positive.
Exactly.
So okay, let's not go there.
So with this mitochondrial antioxidant of ergothionine, what's fascinating about it is we do not make it, so therefore we can have, we need to supplement with it or eat it. There is a deficiency potentially of it. This is being explored more. Dr. Bruce Ames, famed longevity researcher, has called it the longevity vitamin, because you also have a unique transporter system, the ETT, in your body, meaning you were evolved to use this ingredient. It's a transport system just for this ingredient, and it's uniquely stored and ready when your body needs it to protect the mitochondria. So there's this whole mechanistic pathway around this ingredient, and it's largely unknown. So I think, again, a really great stack would be spermidine and ergothionine to really protect the mitochondria and enhance this cellular detox. Great. With that could be N-acetylcysteine too.
Oh yeah. Oh my, there's just so much stuff to unpack. So I just want to mention something. Like,
tell I'm excited about this?
This is so cool. Like, I think you're mentioning all those stacks that kind of go together, which is really like exciting and kind of overwhelming pathways. And one of the things is to realize, you mentioned just mitophagy and autophagy as well. I want to put emphasis on how important those processes are, because if you have damaged cell or damaged mitochondria, they are creating more damage in your body.
Yeah.
So actually, this clear. That's why fasting is one of the best things to do, right? Because you enhance autophagy and mitophagy by thousands of percent. Actually. And I just love the mechanism of spermidine. I just have to quickly mention it here.
Yeah.
Because one of those mechanisms is that your body naturally inhibits autophagy if you eat and if you don't fast. And spermidine inhibits the inhibitor.
Right.
Right. So it enhances autophagy and mitophagy this way. So I just wanted to mention that because it's just so fascinating. And so L-ergothionine is probably some kind of essential micronutrient, maybe. We need to have it in small amounts. Do you know any other essential micronutrient that's as important?
The only other one. Yeah, that's it. We're on the same page with everything. The only other, like, in like the last 50 years, there's only been pretty much, as far as I know of, two ingredients that have been looked at to be potential vitamins, and it's PQQ and ergothionine. And, you know, PQQ is a sister molecule to CoQ10, works on that electron transport chain pathway, important for energy. In particular, it's going to be most important in the energy-dependent cells. So think of cardiomyocytes, like your heart cells. Those are going to be highly energy-dependent. Now, people tend to think of this drawing from high school biology where you have one mitochondria in the cell. This isn't necessarily true. You have up to 5,000 mitochondria in a cell. And in these, in brain cells, there's a lot of energy needed, and in particular, the heart cells. Obviously, that makes sense. And so we see when people have cardiomyopathy, like different conditions where there's disease etiology, pathologies happening in the cardiac structure, then this is going to potentially make a huge difference in the ability to improve from those scenarios. So, you know, if you have coronary heart disease, for example, this is going to be very called for to have CoQ10. What's interesting too is when you take statins, which we could do a whole show on how much I hate the idea of cholesterol being villainized. I think it's literally the biggest scam in medicine. I would just beg people, I don't want to do this quite on this show, but like if someone's just giving you total cholesterol, HDL, LDL, saying LDL is the bad cholesterol and they're your doctor, they're not a good doctor. Like, go do a better test, which is a VAP test or an NMR test, and do a deeper dive into your subfractions and understand what's happening with these different particles. And the best indicator that we have as far as a lab test would be lipoprotein A. So that's the one to look at. Do not trust. LDL is not a bad cholesterol. To say anything is like bad that's inherent to us is ridiculous. So that's a whole other diatribe. But anyway, cholesterol, when we inhibit it with statins, you end up deficient in CoQ10 levels. This is where like the cramping comes in, and a number of the side effects that we see when you have statin drug use, like, you know, Lipitor and Crestor and all these different drugs, that you're ending up with more headaches, more fatigue, more muscle aches, more spasms. It's because you're not able to produce energy on the level that you should in your cells, and your cells have a cholesterol layer, and you become deficient in CoQ10.
What you consider like influential and promising supplements or stacks for mental health that really can help?
Yeah, this is probably one of my most passionate areas because, like I said, I've dealt with depression a lot of my life and suicidal thoughts at a number of points. And this is extremely important to me and why I kind of started digging into psychedelics and then talking about doing psychedelics the right way. I think we'll need another show on psychedelics because there's so much for me to talk about there, and I don't want to like really uncover that without doing it the right way. There's a lot to discuss there because it's very convoluted. I am a big fan of them, but they need to be done in the right way. So just as far as supplements, I would say, I mean, first off, depression, and I'll be talking about this tomorrow at my talk here at Biohacker Summit. Depression is multifaceted with all the neurotransmitters being low. This idea, this theory about serotonin is very false. Like it's grossly oversimplified. And the idea of using SSRIs can have short-term benefits. Like most anything that you're just inhibiting something, it can have a short-term benefit, but the body finds ways to overcome this with homeostasis, right? So like in time, you see very little benefit happening from these SSRIs, and the meta-analyses done by almost There's been three now done on SSRIs I can think of. And what we're finding is that they're saying at the end of these things that the benefit is not shown with SSRIs, that it's fairly equivocal at best, and at worst, they're potentially counterproductive and contraindicated. So SSRIs, I would like really think twice about, but I have a number of ingredients that I can tell you about.
Yeah, I just want to mention with SSRIs, I mean, we've talked to some like psychotherapists and neuroscientists and stuff like that. Like, they can be, you know, because if you look at, you know, general population and you give them SSRIs who have like depression and stuff like that, well, you can find that they are close to placebo almost, but they have a little bit more success in like 1 year time. The thing is, actually, if you look at subpopulations, you see that people have different types of depression, for example, inflammation-based and stuff like that. With inflammation-based depression, it doesn't work that well if they don't have increased inflammation, which is, by the way, inflammation-based depression is 60% of people with depression. So if you look at the other 40, in those subtypes of patients, which is not inflammation ones, the SSRIs actually work pretty well. So I think it's kind of, we don't really know yet how to work with these things, exactly. Even though we've been working for them for a long time, but I just don't want to like only demonize SSRIs.
I'm not demonizing them. Yeah. Just out and out. There's certainly people that this works for.
Yeah.
But I think like it shouldn't be like the first path that we go down.
Yeah.
And like I said, when you look at depression, usually all the neurotransmitters are depressed, meaning they're low. Like you talk about dopamine and GABA and endorphins and glutamate, and all of these things are low, not just serotonin. The idea that it's just purely serotonin is kind of maybe inaccurate.
Yeah,
I would say
it is. Yeah, that's actually true. Like, I'm fascinated by how general public kind of sees these things, because right now there's been a study, SSRIs don't work on serotonin, and like people who study that, they know that for tens of years already.
Yeah.
That hypothesis of depression is just wrong. So it seems like it works on maybe BDNF and neuroplasticity,
yes,
but
yes, exactly.
Whole other
topic. Exactly, potentially.
So right now, let's just get
there's signaling that happens. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, and by the way, with psychedelics, you do see all of the neurotransmitters come back on board, and it's not just a serotonin thing. So this is like one of the ways that, you know, the entire brain structure, neurochemistry is affected on a profound operating system level in a way that's different than a very specific drug. And that can be incredibly profound. So some of the supplements that I'm most excited about, I mean, you've probably heard of Lion's Mane for BDNF. It's okay. So I like to go like 10 times better every time. So there's an ingredient called 7,8 dihydroxyflavone. And what this has been shown to do is increase BDNF better than injected BDNF.
What's the name again?
7,8 dihydroxyflavone. So like 7,8-DHF. And what's really interesting here is this is new data. There's a lot of work to be done, but I believe that this could be the most profound thing that we know of yet to enhance BDNF. Now, polyphenols do help pretty dramatically with neuroplasticity and brain-derived neurotrophic factor as well. And there's a lot of other things, neuroplasticity, that BDNF gets labeled a lot, but there's NGF. Actually, mTOR is involved in that as well. But not only is there, now there's, and I like metabolites, so I talked to you about this. So there's some theorizing now that maybe the metabolite is actually doing more. So there's the, it's the 4-DMA 7,8-dihydroxyflavone that, you know, could be even better. The thing that I'm playing with is that I'm not sure which one's better. I like the idea, again, of stacking a pathway. If anything's reversible and preventing that from happening, I'm pushing the pathway the way I want. So I'm actually stacking the 7-8-dihydroxyflavone and the 4-DMA 7-8-dihydroxyflavone together. So.
And again, are these just research compounds, or can you get it?
You can get them. Yeah, they're Nootropics Depot. No, they do occur naturally. There is a flower that's at least the 7-8-dihydroxyflavone does occur naturally in. So, it is compliant from that perspective. The 4-DMA one, I'm not sure if that does occur naturally or not. So, but I know like one company is nootropicsdepot.com that has both of those compounds. Yeah.
So we've got two really promising compounds, and except them, like, what would you add to, for example, your daily supplement routine to just support your mental health?
Well, I mean, going back to serotonin, I mean, certainly, I think if you're feeling flat and you know what low serotonin feels like, I'm not saying, again, I'm going back to, it's not a bad thing. So like bringing serotonin back online, especially after a journey, when you have like this massive abundant growth, but then you have this contraction that's natural. I think like vitamin D3, I mean, certainly getting your sunlight, taking D3, especially if you're a darker skinned individual, the more melanin you have, the less D3 you will get from the sunlight. So it's important to, and especially if you're at a latitude, like a more northern latitude, it's good to get supplemental D3, an oil-based one, and add K2 to it. Saffron is a really interesting herb at serotonin modulation. In particular, there's a compound in saffron you want to get it standardized to, not just regular saffron, but saffronal, N-A-L at the end. And that is something to make sure it's standardized to. That's been shown to affect serotonin. And we're not clear, like, it's how all these neurotransmitters get, you know, modulated is unique. So it's not clear on exactly how it works. Zembrin is a kana extract. And kana is also known as Scelletium tortuosum. And it's a natural, mild SSRI. And it's standardized to mesembrine and mesembrinone. And these compounds can, again, bring serotonin back online. 5-HTP or tryptophan can help with the synthesis of serotonin. So, like, one of the things I do, like, post-journey, in particular, or if I'm just feeling flat, you know, if I'm feeling like it's been dark too much, whatever, I will take vitamin D3, I'll take the saffron with saffronol, I'll take the Zembrin as a natural reuptake inhibitor. I don't like using these things chronically, but if you're low and you're taking something to increase serotonin, like the D3, the saffron, and in particular the 5-HTP, and you're then inhibiting, you're going to, like, you know, bring it online a lot faster. So would I do all that chronically? No, but like when I'm feeling low, that's a really effective stack. So I know what low feels like. And yes, that is an effective stack. So I do like serotonin. I agree with you. That would be one stack. Obviously, DHA fish oil has been looked at a lot when it comes to depression. I think a lot of the neurological fundamental basis ingredients, like things like alpha GPC for choline, like DHA for the lipids, you know, that the brain is largely, you know, fat lipids. So like, you know, nurturing that would be ideal. Also, if you've had traumatic brain injury, which can result from physical damage, but also depression, anxiety, and traumas, like on an emotional level, you know, looking at some of these ingredients that have affected that would be elevating ketones. So this is where fasting, using things like the drug metformin, or in my case, I like berberine, or because I patent the metabolites, dihydroberberine, which is 5 times more bioavailable, lasts twice as long in the plasma. You don't get the GI distress of berberine. That's going to increase ketones, lower blood glucose, allow for better brain energetics, utilization of ketones. taking C8 MCTs, caprylic acid. That's going to help with brain energetics, as well as exogenous ketones, in particular taking the active isomer, which would be the R or DBHB. And the sodium, by the way, works better than all the other salts when we've looked at this. This is just kind of in-house research, but it works dramatically better. Calcium's the worst, sodium's the best. And then creatine, you know, is really potent at protecting the brain. And as a methylator, we see it help a lot with traumatic brain injury. Does protect the DNA. I think it should be included in every multivitamin, or it should be a daily nutrient that you're getting at least a gram of a day. You don't need to take mega doses of this stuff, but I think that, you know, that's a potent one. And it actually like works far more than strength and power. Like it protects bone, it protects the testes and reproductive organs, the brain, the eyes. Actually, and anything that's like really protective to eyesight, we see like also being helpful with the brain and vice versa. I mean, they're so correlated. So like the carotenoids, like lutein and zeaxanthin, that helps with like concentration, with hand-eye coordination, those kinds of things. You know, that would be great in particular. If you're a gamer, if you're a soldier, like, you know, whatever, if you're like you're using your eyesight a lot, you know, a surgeon or, you know, whatever, that would be one to look at. I keep...
That's cool. Okay. That's so cool. I mean, you just listed... we love all those things, and we also like love to talk about them because many people don't realize, because they have creatine in this kind of fitness category and stuff like that, but it's been shown that in vegan and vegetarians, it increases cognitive function.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it's so amazing and helps with mental health as well. So I think it's also...
The methylated B vitamins, like, oh, yeah, definitely can't skip, yeah, too, like methylcobalamin in particular, B12.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, in its coenzymated active form versus like in supplements and in cereals and all these things, you typically get cyanocobalamin, which is really a vastly inferior form. And in particular, this is most seen where people have MTHFR gene variants that the folic acid... conversion to the active 5-methyltetrahydrofolate has several steps enzymatically, and you can have deficiencies of any of those enzymes at each step. So there's a lot of people that take folic acid, get folic acid in their foods or in their supplements, and have high circulating folic acid if you were to test it, but don't have the active 5-methyltetrahydrofolate in plasma or in cell. And this can lead to anemia and certainly a lot of issues. So like getting the coenzymated, methylated, active forms of the B vitamins is super helpful. This would be like...
In particular, which like all of the B complex, the whole one, or what are we talking about?
I think most important would be, you know, methylcobalamin for B12, potentially P5P for B6. But at the top of the charts is going to have to be because there's several enzymatic steps and there is a demonstrated genetic variant with MTHFR is going to be that folic acid.
I would like to ask maybe one of the last questions. How can I know that the product I'm taking is...
This is a great question.
Great. Is the one that I should take.
This is something I'm very passionate about, is like, this is the next step, is like, okay, I'm going to take this supplement that lists this ingredient. How do I know it's in there? One, I'm going to say this blanketly for you guys and your listeners. Do not support any company that sells a product that has a proprietary blend. Period. Proprietary blend. Meaning like, it'll like, say it'll be like the muscle and strength blend with 1700 milligrams and there'll be 16 ingredients, and literally by law you can have 1699 milligrams of the first ingredient because they're listed in order of descending mass, and you can have the other 15 ingredients be 1 milligram, and that's legal. So look for full transparency where they're listing each ingredient, the dose. If it's an herb, they're listing the plant part, root, stem, leaf, berries, bark. They're listing the genus and species, and they're listing the standardization, If it's an herb, I believe most of them should be standardized for an active. And all of that's clear. Now I can go back to a study. You can go to PubMed or Google Scholar or whatever it is and look up, okay, like, is this ingredient that's in this product at the right dose, in the right form, the right plant part, in the right frequency, like in the study, were they using once a day, twice a day, three times a day? You know, was it co-administered with something else? Was it given with meals, without meals? Like, what is it? And so now I can explore this and have more clarity, more certainty. And certainly when you have branded ingredients, you get more certainty in terms of quality assurance, in terms of them only allowing you to license it if it's dosed the right way. You know, those kinds of things that I do prefer and like to use branded ingredients that have the research done on those particular ingredients. They've paid for that research, like I've done with a lot of my ingredients. So I lean on, you know, using the branded forms when possible. But that's, you are able to call these companies and ask for the quality control, their testing, their third party testing, and say, I want to see that. And if they say, we don't have that, or we don't have a department that does that, we just have a guy that sources this stuff and throws it up on Amazon, it's like, okay. And by the way, Amazon, there's a lot of knockoffs of big brands like Thorne or Now or whatever, and only buy them directly from like a trusted seller, like a GNC, Vitamin Shop, or bodybuilding.com, or whatever it is, or the company itself on Amazon, like Thorne, buy from the Thorne store in Amazon. Like if it's, you know, Mike James on Amazon, like there's a good chance that those could be knockoffs and therefore have no active in them. And it's something that a number of these brands are actually working hard to prevent, but is a huge problem right now.
We could talk about this topic for hours.
Yes.
We really appreciate your time. Thank you. Thank you for that. And I hope we will continue when we will follow this conversation in the future, for example, about psychedelics, adaptogens, and the topics we did cover today, because it was really a pleasure.
Yes, I wanted to get into psychedelics, into adaptogens, all that stuff. So we'll hopefully talk about that in the future.
Yeah.
And I would love if, you know, your followers can follow me.
Of course.
Sean Wells. Yeah, SeanWells.com. Like I have a free newsletter that goes out every week with a lot of the science at Sean Wells on a number of the platforms, S-H-A-W-N. Like my Instagram has a lot of infographics and stuff that's really broken down. And then energyformula.com, or go to Amazon and look up Energy Formula for the book. The website has a bunch of free gifts, like a fasting guide and a hidden chapter on natural movement and a bunch of really cool stuff. So yes, I would love the support. I do a lot of what I do. I make money on the ingredients and the formulations. I don't make money on my book at this moment, on me speaking, on my social media platform. That's all education and something I'm just very passionate about. You can see I believe in this stuff a lot. So, you know, I think that'll come through in my material that I put out there, that it's very non-biased, it's very educational, and hopefully distilled down in a way that's easy to understand.
Perfect. Thank you so much. It was like, yeah, it was really a pleasure to meet you, to talk to you, and hopefully you'll do the follow-up and
yeah,
follow Sean.
Yeah, and DM me if you have any questions,
yeah,
of course,
yeah.
And, you know, tell these guys what you want to hear next time.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, follow us as well. We are on socials as well, and we try to do literally the same thing. Like, we love, like, the podcast is the main thing, but somehow the Instagram and other stuff grew as well because we try to educate there. So yeah, thank you for that. I think the bits of this interview, this episode are going to be somewhere over there on TikToks and Instagram. So
I got one bonus ingredient for you guys.
Cool.
It's going to blow your mind. Give me 60 seconds.
All right, let's do it.
Thanks for tuning in and staying with us.
You can add another hour.
L-beba. So beba, beta amino isobutyric acid. Beba is the exercise mimetic. It's the signal in your body that tells your body it's intensely working out. And so when you're working out very hard, beta levels go up in the plasma. It's from breaking down L-valine, the branched chain amino acid in the muscle pool, okay? And so the supplement I've been working on, when you take L-beta exogenously as a supplement, it enhances levels of beta with your workout, and your body thinks it's working out more intensely. And so you get faster adaptation, faster recovery, faster muscle growth, more fat loss, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So beta is pretty cool. I'm really excited about that.
Well, thank you so much. That's okay. Like, you know, top information for the industry. So
yeah,
cool.
You got it.
All right, guys, if you stayed here, right, like till the end, you got the premium content, right? So enjoy that. Have a beautiful day. Thank you, Sean. Enjoy the rest of the venue. Thank you for the opportunity to the Biohacker Summit, because they helped us to set up this place.
Yes.
So they're doing a great job. All right. Well,
all right. Thank you, guys. All right. See you next time. Bye, guys.
Brave Heart.